my choice. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes and I'll watch my time. Your Honor, I have 3 points to make. First, contrary to travelers' representations, no other court has applied an analogous AIP endorsement to bar coverage for affirmative claims brought rather than liability claims against the policyholder. Second, Trusted Peck made no intellectual property infringement or violation claims against my choice or Munn. And third, the AIP cannot bar a defense to Munn, who did not sue Trusted Peck for any claim, much less one for an intellectual property violation. To the first point, it's important to note that in arguing to the district courts, travelers stated the actual language of the AIPE endorsement, which we address in the briefing. The actual language states any other personal injury or advertising injury alleged in any claim or suit that also alleges any such infringement or violation. In that context, the word alleged must be understood as alleged against the insured. Risks are insured against. Only claims of a claimant can create a claim or suit to which the insurance applies. It is also key to note that because the court believed that the decision it had looked to had applied it to affirmative claims for relief, it didn't focus on the fact that the definition of this suit as used in the policy had been restated to focus on a suit in the view of travelers, including an action by my choice against Trusted Peck. If you look at the actual language of the policy, spend some time at page 13 of 37 in the reply, addressing the actual language of the use of the term suit in the insuring section and the suit itself definition, and all of them address an alleged suit against an insured as the context in which they find that the term suit properly applies. So in the insuring agreement, it states we will have no duty to defend the insured against any suit seeking damages for personal and advertising injury to which the insurance does not apply. Conditions, a claim is made or suit brought against any insured. Suit, a civil proceeding in which damages because of personal and advertising injury to which this insurance applies are alleged. And of course, the law is very clear that policy exclusions are strictly construed against the insurer. And interpreting the AIPEE endorsement to address only claims against an insured is a permissible reading of that contract that avoids creating any inconsistencies in accord with California Civil Code Section 1652. Indeed, in a decision from this court, Burlington Insurance Co. v. Minador, M-I-N-A-D-O-R, Holdings, Inc. at 690 Fed APPX 918 at 922, makes that very point in a very analogous circumstance that supports the construction of the policy that we advance. Also, another decision of this court, Lexington Insurance Co. v. Devaney, is one where the AIPIE doesn't meet that standard of explaining or reduction or diminution in coverage purportedly affected by this errant clause is. Also critical, Allstate Insurance Co. v. Fibus, published decision of this court, 55 F. 2nd, 660 at 663. With a endorsement which had fragmentary statements and found that it did highlight the effect of the alleged change. Ultimately, then, the case doesn't meet the McKinnon v. Truck Insurance Exchange 31 Cal 4th 635 at 648 requirement that an insurer cannot escape its basic duty to insure by means of an exclusionary clause that is unclear. As to the next point, there is simply no cause of action for any form of intellectual property violation. To the extent that the traveler seeks to argue that some reference to proprietary information suffices. I direct the court to a very recent decision that postdated briefing from the district court involving Cisco Systems v. William Chung, 2020 U.S. District 92497. And at asterisk 42, the court goes and talks about the difficulty of pleading a trade secret misappropriation claim, which requires great particularity and specificity. If this court were to find that the errant reference to proprietary information in the counterclaim suffices to deem that a trade secret misappropriation lawsuit, as it was so labeled and had all elements to meet that requirement, it would turn on its head the jurisprudence about the difficulty of pleading a trade secret case, which the Cisco case alludes to. It also talks about the statutory elements at asterisk 43 to 44 of that decision. And at 76 to 77, after finding that it met every single requirement, going on for pages and pages, and said, I'm here remanding because there's still more that's wanted than needed. As to the last point, Munn, as an individual, simply was not suing anyone. And he has rights, based on the severability doctrine, to a defense benefit himself, no matter what rights attend to the corporate entity. Notably, the court will see, and we call attention to it in our reply brief, that the Minkler, M-I-N-K-L-E-R, v. Safeco case, 49 Cal 4, 315 at 324 to 325, 2010, dealt with the severability clause that, when read in conjunction with an exclusion, it created an ambiguity where an insured would reasonably expect coverage separate for the independent acts and omissions. And quite frankly, it just doesn't pass muster for the severability opinion aspect to be ignored. Because under Fibus from this court, a policy must reasonably be interpreted to provide separate coverage for a consortium claim in addition to another insured bodily injury claim, where, as here, an amendatory endorsement did not conspicuously notify Fibus of the reduction in coverage. It's that failure to notify of the conspicuous reduction in coverage that is extremely problematic. They don't tell you what you've lost, what's been taken away. If this strange language was held to be enforceable, there would be nothing to stop insurers from arguing that if they have a sentence that says any claim be affirmatively brought by an insured bars coverage, then this would provide an opportunity for that redrafting exercise, and suddenly any pursuit of affirmative relief would fall by the waysides and would vitiate any coverage, thereby handicapping an insured who defensively needed to assert either an underlying claim or a counterclaim of some kind, and in effect making the insurer the owner of the rights to the recovery that was at issue in the suit rather than the properly being orchestrated between the parties. If you look carefully at the actual language of the exclusion, you'll see that the addition of the words by my choice or by the insured against the insurer are very much cobbled together. CNA, which also defended this case, didn't have that against another element it agreed to defend, and indeed it signed its right against Travelers to us, viewing its position as questionable. The other case law of interest is the decision by the Ticketmaster, also of this court, talking about facts that an insurer's broader construction based on or arising out of any dispute involving fees, expenses, or costs paid or charged to the insured was not the only reasonable one. At most, our construction offers a reasonable construction of the policy, and thus can be accepted. And to the extent that there's any question as to whether the claims asserted against Munn could constitute a claim for intellectual property, that gives rise to a factual dispute. And in the factual dispute context, that creates a defense. At 972, ALIGNA Tech Inc. v. Federal Insurance Co. 673 F. Sub. 2nd 957-972. As the court has not posed any questions, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, I'm Bruce Celebrezzi for the Appellee Travelers Casualty Insurance Company of America. In this matter, this Court should affirm the decision of the District Court, which granted summary judgment to Travelers because the intellectual property exclusion in the policies that were issued by Travelers to My Choice preclude any duty to defend either My Choice or Mr. Munn in the underlying lawsuit, because the underlying lawsuit involved intellectual property claims. The intellectual property exclusion that is at issue here, that we cite in our brief and discuss at great length, is clear. There are many cases from around the country that have enforced this very language or very similar language. There are cases,
where the intellectual property claims were brought by the insurer.
Your Honor, there is one case happy to talk about, but I also think, and we discussed this in our brief and I would like to discuss with your honors, here the claims that were brought against the insured, the Trusted Tech versus My Choice cross complaint, did contain intellectual property claims, in addition to, of course, My Choice's affirmative claims.
Well, that's not a position that your client appeared to take when he recognized and provided, is it?
No, it is not, but it has been fully briefed. If I can address that point, Your Honor, the California Supreme Court has addressed the very point Your Honor is driving at the moment. When Travelers initially, as Your Honor indicated, was tendered the cross-complaint, the Trusted Tech versus My Choice cross-complaint, it did agree to accept the tender under a full reservation of rights. It quoted the intellectual property exclusion in specifically to withdraw from the defense in the future. When the what happened next was that My Choice, who had been the original plaintiff, filed an amended complaint in the same suit. It had a cause of action for misappropriation of trade secrets, and Travelers withdrew from the defense at that time.
That time with any other basis for denying coverage?
No, Your Honor, there wasn't, and that makes no difference whatsoever legally. Travelers cannot be punished or penalized by accepting a tender of defense that it did not need to accept. The Supreme Court of California in the Scottsdale versus MV Transportation case in 2005 dealt with this exact issue. In that case, it was a similar case to this. It was a misappropriation of trade secrets underlying case. Scottsdale, the insurer, accepted the tender of its insured MV Transportation. It filed a declaratory judgment action stating that it, even though it accepted the tender, it did not believe it was necessary to do so. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, which agreed that in hindsight, Scottsdale never owed a duty to defend in the first place. And in fact, Scottsdale was therefore entitled to recover the attorney fees that it had paid. Here, we are not seeking to recover any attorney's fees. Travelers defended only for a matter of weeks, as Mr. Gauntlet indicated. Other insurers were involved in defending My Choice, so the amount of fees, it made no commercial sense to sue for them. But the California Supreme Court specifically says if you make a mistake and defend a case that you don't need to, you can get your money back. The court can look in hindsight and make that determination. So,
but I hear what you say, and there's responsible for the policy, and yet it did not apparently recognize the exclusion which you're now trying to assert.
Your Honor, I don't know exactly how to respond to that, because Your Honor is suggesting some sort of a waiver as opposed.
I mean, wouldn't a reasonable insurer only apply the exclusionary language to claims made against it?
Your Honor, that is not what the policy says.
No matter who brings the claim, but it doesn't say that.
What it says, Your Honor, is if
the word claim, which by definition suggests something that's against the insured, not something that's brought by the insured,
Your Honor, it says claim or suit.
And exactly how is a layman supposed to say that means if I bring a claim, it's covered by this?
Because suit means suit. There can be no disagreement, I don't think.
And why is the word claim there?
Because the insurance company has certain obligations for claims that have not arisen into suits. But claim does not apply in this instance, where clearly my choice filed a lawsuit against Trusted Tech, its competitor, and Trusted Tech filed a cross-complaint back against it. Clearly that is one suit.
Clearly there's no
doubt that when the My Choice First Amendment complaint was filed asserting a misappropriation of trade secrets claim, that this exclusion would be triggered. But I do need to point out to Your Honors that it really was triggered earlier. The fact that Travelers did not rely on that is
not... Or recognize that.
Well, I think what Your Honor is saying is that any time an insurance company makes a mistake, it has to provide coverage, which the contract does not provide.
What I'm saying is that the action potentially speaks to how understandable the language is. If the insurance company itself did not understand or did not interpret its own policy in a given fashion, I'm not sure why anybody else should be required to read it in a way the insurance company itself didn't figure out.
Your Honor, I'm
not talking about waiver here. I'm talking about something very different. How do we interpret this language and whether the language is ambiguous? And it seems to me if the insurance company itself can't figure out that the language provides it as an exclusion, then that surely suggests to me that the language is at least ambiguous. Because if it wasn't ambiguous, if it was crystal clear, the insurance company would have figured that out from the first instance, and it didn't.
Your Honor, respectfully, I think Your Honor is sort of making my point that the exclusion applies without regard to who has brought the intellectual property claim.
I think that may be ambiguous for a different reason. I'm not trying to argue on that argument that the insurance company's delayed response or delayed interpretation is meaningful, because I don't see a delay on the part of the insurance company in that instance. I'm speaking of the other argument you started to make. When it comes to the claim or suit language, I think the argument for ambiguity can't depend upon what the insurance company did. But it can be made based on why an insured should expect this language to apply not to a claim against the insured, but be treated by a claim brought by the insured against somebody else, because that's not spelled out explicitly as it could be.
Your Honor, I guess we'll just have to disagree respectfully with your...
See, that's a problem for you, isn't it? Because... So I'm giving you a chance to try to tell me why this language shouldn't be treated as ambiguous, why the insured should anticipate that it would be triggered by an affirmative claim brought by the insured against somebody else.
Your Honor, there is one case that is in our brief, although it's in a footnote, we don't discuss it in detail, but I think I should spend a moment on it. It's called WAWDG, Doing Business as Foresight Sports Against Sentinel Insurance. It's from the Southern District of California, so it's a district court case, but I think it establishes the point that I'm trying to make and that Travelers has made. In that case, the underlying suit was started by a company called Max Out versus Dunn, neither of which were insured under the policy. Max Out sued Dunn for patent infringement. Dunn then filed a third-party complaint against the insured Foresight, but not for an intellectual property violation directly, for a breach of warranty of non-infringement. In other words, it was seeking indemnity under the commercial code. And in that case, the court found that even though that third-party complaint, there was no allegation against Foresight, the insured, for breaching or for violating an intellectual property claim, because that third-party complaint was brought in the same suit as the plaintiff case, the intellectual property patent infringement case, that the exclusion would clearly apply, relying on molecular and cases that we cite in our brief. Your Honor, I think that the language, what Your Honor is suggesting is that suit cannot mean suit. The suit must mean what Mr. Gauntlett says is suit against the insured. But the rules of construction...
Change your language slightly. Not must. The question is, could an insured reasonably anticipate that? It could be spelled out explicitly. I did encounter one case where a policy spelled it out explicitly. But that's not what we have in front of us here. So, I have not previously looked at the WAW... But all the cases I looked at and all the cases cited by the district court do not pose this issue. They involve claims brought against the insured. And I can understand why the insured would view it that way. I really have more difficulty understanding why the insured would anticipate this is triggered by a claim brought by the insured for which it's not seeking coverage.
Counsel, I have a more basic kind of logical, conceptual problem with this, because my understanding of exclusion, exclusions refer to things that would otherwise be covered, but for the fact there's a specific narrow exclusion expressed in the policy. Is that your understanding of exclusion?
Yes, and that's exactly the scenario here, Your Honor.
No, because... if the insured were to allege misappropriation of trade secrets against another party, that would not even come within the coverage language, because the coverage language is about defending the insured against risk, and this is an affirmative claim. So this affirmative claim, to my mind, policy, so it could not come within the scope of an exclusion.
If I may, Your Honor, I completely agree with Your Honor that if the scenario had been My Choice sues Trusted Tech, then Travelers never would have even heard about it.
Right, because you're not insuring for that. So how could it fall within logically? And this goes to the argument about the expectations of the insured and that ambiguity. The policy, it goes against your whole conception of the coverage language and the exclusion language and how all of that works in an insurance policy.
And the reason that it works here is because My Choice versus Trusted Tech was just the beginning. Then Trusted Tech filed a cross complaint against My Choice. That's what was tendered to Travelers. Travelers was not asked initially to Travelers was asked to defend the cross complaint.
Absolutely, when the, right.
The and therefore, and it would have fought, there were claims in that cross complaint for a defamation and disparagement, which are personal injury and advertising injury offenses, which means that but for the exclusion, Travelers would have a duty to defend it, never denied that. When the First Amendment complaint was filed by My Choice, it was provided by Mr. Gauntlett to Travelers, arguing that Travelers should pay for the cost of prosecuting that counterclaim. This is in the record, the declaration of Ms. Sauter, 265, 266, and 267 of the record, stating that Travelers should pay for the prosecution of that complaint because it was, quote, conducted against liability. In other words, was defensive in nature. But if I could, before my time runs out, I do need to direct Your Honors to the cross complaint itself in paragraphs 18, 21, 63, 70, and 80, which are in the record. trusted tech. It does not assert a cause of action against my choice for misappropriated trade secrets. That's true, and it doesn't need to. The California Supreme Court has said many times the court is to look at the facts alleged, not the causes of action. But they allege it's stealing or a theft of or invasion of these software keys, pricing lists, confidential data, proprietary data, all of which are intellectual property. And Your Honors are to affirm the district court if they got the right result, not necessarily the right reason. And the right result here is that this exclusion says it applies to any suit that involves a personal injury or advertising injury claim. So we have defamation and disparagement in the same suit as both the allegations in the paragraphs I just mentioned in the cross complaint and in the First Amendment complaint for misappropriation of trade secrets. Every single court that has addressed this language has found it to be unambiguous. And they don't say it's only unambiguous in X fact pattern or Y fact pattern. More than a dozen cases around the country find it to be unambiguous. Respectfully, Your Honor, we think the language is very clear, and we would ask you to affirm.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gonsalves?
Yes, it's important to remember that ambiguity is contextual. It depends on the facts before the court. And you can find ambiguity in the context of the facts, even though other courts facing different facts have not done so. WAWGD case, I urge you to read it, Your Honor, because I think the court needs to explain why it's of questionable logic to the extent anyone seeks to cite it for the proposition that Traveler does here. It's a property damage case. It doesn't involve personal and advertising injury. It cites the decisions, other Sentinel's decisions. It deals with Hartford's much broader exclusionary language. And the portion of the opinion that is being cited by Travelers is clear dicta. MV Transportation, cited affirmatively by the California Supreme Court in the Hartford v. Swift decision in 2014, goes on at length to talk about the breadth of the duty to defend, which was its focus, not any prosecution. It talks about its facts in the complaint and inferences and all those kinds of elements. Suit means suit limited to a suit against the insured contextually based on those provisions of the policy that I alluded to. There was no suggestion in Travelers' arguments that the policy language buttress its definition of suit. It simply has no construction that is supported in that way. The Button case we reference explains why claim is there. There's a claim can create a settlement duty even absent a suit. But since 2001 in the Foster Gardner decision, the carrier will be the first to run around and say, where's the suit that is filed against the insured? We don't see it. That would be their view, if the counterclaim fact allegations on proprietary information were because they didn't seek any particular damage remedy or established seek to establish liability based on that reference conduct.
Counsel, I have a practical question. Mr. Celebrezzi made the point that Travelers isn't on the hook for paying the cost of prosecuting your action, and in fact, my choice didn't ask it to pay the cost for prosecuting the initial action that it filed. It just filed a claim when Tech filed its counterclaims and asked for the defense costs. As a practical matter, is the existence of the My Choice counterclaim, does that require Travelers to pay the cost of prosecuting that counterclaim? Are these things all divided out? You're paying.
It's a very distinct issue. Look at the 1997 Aerojet case from the California Supreme Court, and it explained the concept that some fees that are not defensive or at requiring a defense can be defensive in character where they're conducted against liability for strategic purposes. Mm-hmm. And it may well be that the litigation of the complaint, which was the converse of the allegations for disparagement and defamation, was the most effective way to place into controversy the entitlement of the insureds to have liability. And the fact that their case settled after a police raid of trusted tech suggests that they may have been onto something. And that case, the Aerojet case, may provide a pathway to get recovery, but that will not be because there was any duty related to the defense activity, but because the defense of the counterclaim was buttressed by, supported by, and is in accord with the logic of the Aerojet case and its progeny, would be permit that pursuit. And there's a bunch, I just wrote an article.
The best defense is a good offense? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. There you go, Your Honor. And that's how the courts do a practical consideration for practical jurists. I believe my time is up, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. MyTrace Software versus Travelers Casualty Insurance will be submitted. And this session of the court is adjourned for today. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
This court for this session stands adjourned.